This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
We are aware that it is because of geography that the most responsibility is and will continue to be placed on Europe. However, we would also like the global community to show solidarity and recognize the fact that this is a global crisis.
That's European Council President Donald Tusk speaking at the G7 summit about Europe's migrant and refugee crisis. Details coming up.
Also, Kenyan police arrest two people planning an attack in either Nairobi or Mombasa. And a militant attack has shut down Nigeria's Escravos oil terminal.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the G7 summit is underway in Japan. Although the location is far from Europe's migrant and refugee crisis, the matter was brought before world leaders. European Council President Donald Tusk called for G7 support.
We are aware that it is because of geography that the most responsibility is and will continue to be placed on Europe. However, we would also like the global community to show solidarity and recognize the fact that this is a global crisis.
Tusk says the EU wants G7 support in what he calls three dimensions.
First, to commit to increasing global assistance so that immediate and long-term needs of refugees and host communities are met. The international community should acknowledge that when Turkey, Lebanon, and Jordan assist refugees, they are in fact providing a global public good. And this public good must be financed by the global community. Second, that the G7 encourages international financial institutions and other donors to raise their assistance. In this regard, the EU funds for Syria, Africa, and Turkey, along with the work of the European Investment Bank, serve as a role model for all of us. Third, that the G7 encourages the establishment of resettlement schemes and other legal forms of migration all around the world. As you know, Europe is doing a lot, and we are happy to share our experiences. But the world has been confronted with the highest number of refugees, asylum seekers, and internally displaced persons since the Second World War. This is why more action is needed to make legal channels of migration possible. Those who criticize us should rather think how to increase their assistance, because what Europe provides is already massive.
That's European Council President Donald Tusk speaking at the G7 summit in Japan.
Italy is the main destination for migrants and refugees crossing the Mediterranean from North Africa, especially from Libya. But once in Italy, policy disagreements among European countries have prevented most of them from traveling elsewhere. There are reports many migrants and refugees in Italy are being exploited as cheap labor, and there's concern about the migrants' health problems. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following developments from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua about those issues as well as news of yet another migrant boat tragedy.
The Coast Guard has confirmed a fresh disaster off the coast of Libya, about 35 nautical miles off the coast of Libya. Up to 80 people might have died on that boat that overturned. 24 have been saved, and around 600 migrants have been rescued in various operations in that area just this morning. In the past few days, around 6,000 migrants have been rescued in that area. Some of these boats are simply capsizing because they're just overloaded with people.
Well, as you know, all these migrants are being taken to Italy, and because of the various disagreements between EU nations, most of them are stranded in Italy, really can't cross the borders. Now, you've been learning that many of them are being exploited in some ways. Can you tell us about that?
There have been many instances of exploitation and concerns that the new migrants end up in ghetto areas, particularly in rural regions, where they're hired to pick tomatoes or oranges, working in the fields for very low wages. And it's quite shocking when you actually visit some of these southern regions as a tourist, some of the areas like Puglia, Calabria and Sicily, because you can be driving down the road and you come across these little shacks, these little shanty towns, where the African immigrants are often living in very, very poor conditions. And last year, there was a report from MEDU, that is an Italian organisation called Doctors for Human Rights, and they found that 83% of day labourers were working illegally, working very long hours for very poor wages with poor security and in what they called disastrous hygienic conditions.
Now, has the government done anything about this?
There doesn't seem to be any concerted government action to clamp down on this. And that's of great concern because one Italian media report described these immigrants as invisible people. There were around 400,000 in Italy in 2015 without legal working papers. Now, I'm not sure how many of those were African. But on the streets of Rome, it's common to find African immigrants begging or selling jewellery or handbags on the street. Just this morning, I met a Nigerian man who has been begging outside my supermarket regularly. And I asked him, why can't you find a job? And he said, I'm a driver. I've been here for 2 years. I haven't found a job and I'm here on the street. So that gives you some idea of some of the difficulties that people are facing.
Josephine, is there any concern about the health issues that these migrants bring with them?
When the immigrants are intercepted by the Italian Navy or the Coast Guard or other vessels, they're immediately checked for any sort of medical issues. Once they start to move into the community or migrant centres, there's perhaps less monitoring of what's going on. And MEDU, the Doctors for Human Rights organisation in Italy, just this week said Italy is now seriously unprepared for this new wave of migrants and appealed to local regions and councils to do more to take care of these people. In recent weeks, we've seen a community from Eritrea, a community of immigrants, erecting tents just very close to the heart of Rome. And this organisation sends a mobile health truck into that area to provide services and check on people's health and well-being.
We're hearing a lot of sad news about the migrants. Any positive news?
There are some very positive stories about how Italians have reached out to immigrants, particularly the Catholic Church. They're doing a lot in using their convents and other buildings to offer accommodation to immigrants who are arriving in Italy. But in one particular town in the southern region of Calabria, there's been a very positive story where 400 immigrants have been welcomed into what was essentially a dying town where the people have either migrated to other countries or just simply growing old and they haven't got enough young people to keep the town going. So there are immigrants going to this town called Riace, and they come from as far afield as Afghanistan, Eritrea, and many other countries. So they're bringing this town back to life. And one resident said, we're very proud to attract this kind of tourism that actually welcomes people. She said that in a town like Riace, they can also be black. They don't just have to be blonde. They can be from any country in the world. So that's great to see how those immigrants are recharging that dying town and giving new life to what was an economy in trouble down in Calabria.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. In related news, Greek authorities continue the evacuation of the makeshift migrant and refugee camp in Idomeni at the Macedonian border. The process is in its third day and is expected to last several more. In all, more than 8,000 people will be relocated to newer camps elsewhere in Greece. Migrants and refugees had gathered at the border town, hoping to take the Balkans route into Europe. However, Macedonia closed its border and is refusing to reopen it to them. There are about 54,000 migrants and refugees in Greece. Most of them are Syrians.
Reuters says Kenyan police have arrested two people planning an attack in either Nairobi or Mombasa. Police also seized bomb-making materials, including nails, ball bearings, batteries, electrical wire, fertilizer, and cell phones. The police say the men were arrested in the Kangemi neighborhood west of Nairobi. Reuters says the men had also been involved in an online document supporting Islamic State leader Abubakar al-Baghdadi. Experts say it's not clear if the men have a direct link to Islamic State or are simply sympathizers of the terrorist group.
A new report from the World Health Organization says nearly 1,000 healthcare workers have been killed and more than 1,500 wounded in 19 countries, and that many of the incidents were intentional. From Geneva, Lisa Schlein has more on the report, which covers the past 2 years.
This first effort to consolidate and analyze data on attacks on healthcare in emergency settings around the world sheds light on the severity and frequency of the problem. The findings show widespread violations of international humanitarian law, which, if proven, could amount to war crimes. Rick Brennan is the director of the WHO's Department of Emergency and Risk Management. He says the figures presented in the report are startling and indicate the devastating impact that attacks against health workers have on communities.
Every attack on healthcare disrupts the delivery of health services and denies communities access to essential health services in emergencies, the time that they really need them most. Perhaps one of the most concerning findings of the report is that close to two-thirds of the attacks on healthcare, on health facilities, on health workers, on ambulances, on patients have been deliberate.
The report says Syria had the most reported attacks on healthcare each year, twice as many as any other country or territory in 2014, and nearly four times as many in 2015. Syria is followed by the West Bank and Gaza Strip, Iraq, Pakistan, Libya, Ukraine, and Central African Republic in the rankings of the 19 countries surveyed. The report says the Central African Republic is the only country where attacks against healthcare have gone down. The report attributes the drop to successful interventions by the International Committee of the Red Cross with armed groups in that country. The report's author, Erin Kenny, says attacks that hinder the delivery of preventive or curative health services occur in many emergency settings, not just in situations of conflict.
That's everything from the Ebola healthcare workers who were killed in Guinea, the polio workers who were attacked during vaccination. So while the bombings we see are the things that get the most visibility and the most press probably, the attacks we have in this report includes looting, arson, kidnapping, torture, execution.
While this report documents attacks against healthcare in 2014 and 2015, the World Health Organization says the horror persists. Over the past couple of months, it notes a number of hospitals and health facilities in Syria, Iraq, Yemen, and elsewhere have been hit with a heavy loss of life. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The G7 summit is underway in Japan. Although the location is far from Europe's migrant and refugee crisis, the matter was brought before world leaders. And Kenyan police arrest two people planning an attack in either Nairobi or Mombasa. And a new report from the World Health Organization says nearly 1,000 healthcare workers have been killed and that many of the incidents were intentional. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
A militant attack has shut down Nigeria's Escravos oil terminal. According to Reuters, a militant group called the Niger Delta Avengers claimed responsibility for the attack on the Chevron facility. The Avengers say they want a greater share of oil profits and end to pollution and independence for the region. A Twitter account under the group's name said it warned Chevron and that it blew up the main electricity feed to the terminal. Reuters says the government has cut funding for an amnesty program to the region and canceled contracts with former militants to protect the pipelines from attack.
In part two of a two-part report on Nigeria's Fulani, climate change drives the semi-nomads and their cattle further south into the country's middle belt regions for better pastures. Former grazing lands are being taken over by economic development and corruption, so the government is considering turning the semi-nomads into ranch hands. David Arnold talked to two African specialists from the Chatham House in London. Sola Tayo and Lena Coney Hoffman say that's not going to work in the short term.
Analysts say any plan to end the clashes between the nomadic cattlemen and the villages of Nigerian farmers should recognize that Fulani are a large and complex population that includes some who have never been bound by the borders of one country and others who are. Two Chatham House analysts with West African expertise talk about the diversity of the Fulani. Lena Hoffman can only estimate the size of their importance in Africa.
I think it's a community that is at least about 30 million. You would find Fulani, Wolof, it would be pronounced differently from Senegal to Cameroon and even the Central African Republic. They are migrational. They've moved across much of Africa and the Sahel and Sahara Belt for centuries now.
Sola Tayo addresses another aspect, their leadership in Nigeria.
You know, you have a lot of settled Fulanis. The actual president himself is a Fulani. A lot of the prominent Nigerians are Fulani.
The list of Fulani who are active politicians is long and covers many West African countries, including Nigeria, Mali, Senegal, and Burkina Faso. Many Fulani are city dwellers, but others, who are more traditional and less schooled, drive livestock across borders. Tayo argues that these seasonal migrants may not be the primary perpetrators of Nigeria's violence. In fact, they may be victims as well.
It's entirely possible that some of these herdsmen are causing trouble, going around harassing settled communities. Some of these attacks have been, you know, local skirmishes, and some of them have been retaliatory attacks where their own people have been attacked and killed by settlers and farmers. There is a kind of an element of tit for tat.
Hoffman thinks government needs to recognize what has changed in West Africa that could explain the roots of a conflict between sedentary farmers and cattlemen on an annual search for grazing lands.
Climate change, deforestation, lots of the areas that Fulanis used to graze in the north of Nigeria have been overgrazed. There are fewer natural water sources, and areas that were previously marked for grazing reserves have been taken over by government, by powerful people, and used for other purposes.
Hoffman says a combination of global warming, economic development, and corruption is a powerful combination that may be forcing these semi-nomadic herdsmen out of business. She looks to the northern border of Nigeria for an obvious sign of what's going wrong for the Fulani herdsmen.
I think a very good example of the impact of environment change is the Lake Chad Basin in the north, sharing water boundaries with Chad, Niger, and Cameroon. And the lake itself has reduced in size by about 90% less than 5 decades. It is an area that is severely impacted by changing climate, and this has affected a previously really good ecologically balanced relationship between farmers and herding communities.
Hoffman says the Nigerian government has a plan that might help these nomads and their large herds of cattle.
Nigeria's President Buhari has spoken publicly on this issue, and I think in that statement, President Buhari proposed setting up a grazing plan which includes cattle ranches. And I think there was a proposal from the Ministry of Agriculture and Rural Development of importing grass-free feeds from Brazil. So there's a plan establishing grazing reserves as well as trying to encourage nomadic communities to settle in ranches.
What does Hoffman think of Mr. Buhari's proposal to persuade these Fulani to settle on ranches surrounded by fences?
I think the chance in the short term is very slim. Changing what is a very strong tradition within this community would take a lot of time.
There may not be enough time to redraw old grazing zones for the cattle of the Fulani or to turn these nomads into ranchers. And security measures by the police or the military could trigger another larger conflict that Nigeria may not be able to contain. This is David Arnold, VOA Washington.
After months of wrangling between the president and lawmakers, Nigeria finally has a federal budget. The spending plan has long been viewed as an avenue for theft of public funds in Nigeria. Chris Stein reports from Lagos.
It's called the Budget of Change. The $30.4 billion budget signed earlier this month includes money for roads, railways, bridges, and social services. President Muhammadu Buhari says he hopes it will restore Nigerians' faith in the ability of lawmakers to spend tax money wisely. The budget received mixed reviews from analysts. Some see it as a step forward for responsible spending in Africa's largest economy. Natural Resource Governance Institute Nigeria Country Officer Dauda Garuba says previous budgets were crammed with kickbacks to lawmakers and ill-scrutinized proposals. He said months of negotiations between the National Assembly and the president was a sign this budget is different.
The bulk of the fight you were maybe hearing was an attempt by people to say, no, we can't do this business as usual, and others saying that, okay, if you can't do the business as usual, we have to do our thorough jobs.
But others say the budget includes money for graft-prone projects and over-the-top spending on lawmakers. The co-founder of Budget, a public spending watchdog group, Olusegun Onigbindi, criticized the allocations of $500 billion to so-called constituency projects, which are meant to benefit the districts of certain lawmakers.
It's nothing that has to do with co-op for the people or maybe things that are sustainable. It's just them picking maybe loyalists or political party members and giving them what they feel they want to pass along.
Nigeria is on the verge of entering a recession, partially the result of the global drop in the price of Nigeria's top commodity, oil. A series of attacks by militants on oil pipelines has dropped production by more than 500,000 barrels, further harming the economy. Inflation has risen to almost 14%, while the government recently raised fuel prices by nearly 67%. A senior program officer with the Center for Democracy and Development, Yusuf Shamsuddin, faulted the budget for spending $577 million on the National Assembly in this economic climate.
This huge amount can be cut down to provide developmental projects for citizens and address our economic problem.
Shamsuddin said the next step in evaluating the budget will be to see if the money allocated actually goes to the projects and programs it is supposed to. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.